The following is offered by Discerning Hearts, a 501c3 nonprofit Catholic apostolate dedicated to spiritual formation through the use of new media. To download this selection, or to browse hundreds of other programs, or to contribute to our mission with a charitable donation which is fully tax deductible, visit our website at discerninghearts.com. Welcome to Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Sister Breege McKenna, who is known worldwide for her ministry to priests and her healing ministry. A member of the Sisters of St. Clair, she has traveled extensively giving conferences in all parts of the world. Her healing from crippling arthritis is recounted in her book, Miracles Do Happen. We're going inside the pages of Sister Breege McKenna's book, The Power of the Sacraments. Welcome, Sister Breege. It is just a blessing to have you with us today.
I'm so happy to be able to join you, Chris.
The power of the sacraments, when you talk about what you're able to accomplish through it, it's the power of just on that little host that sometimes we take for granted, what's available there, that is something that you try to help us not to take for granted.
Yes. Well, you know, Krista, I've always, since my own great miraculous healing back in 1970, you know, I grew up, of course, as a little girl with the sacraments, going to Mass since I was 12 years of age every day. And, you know, my parents both very Catholic, Irish Catholics, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think it wasn't until I experienced my own, what the Pope calls, Pope John Paul and Pope Benedict calls, personal encounter with the risen Jesus, when I was physically healed, that my eyes were opened to the extraordinary power of the sacraments. And that's why in the little book, it's small, but what I tried to do in very concisely was, you know, show how each sacrament has, it's like a journey, has the power to affect our lives because it is a personal encounter with the risen Jesus.
Mm. It's a tremendous blessing, isn't it, that we're able to experience him so fully, and yet we don't have that understanding sometimes. I think that's...
Yes. I think, you know, Chris, I think that a lot of people, Catholics, are not really aware or evangelized because, you know, oftentimes it's people who are converted to the Catholic faith at a later date and who make the choice through the grace of the Holy Spirit, but often through their own research and the wisdom and knowledge of the Holy Spirit given them, that they embrace the Catholic faith with great enthusiasm and understanding. But for many of us, and I suppose the vast majority of Catholics who are baptized as infants, and we kind of can take for granted that, you know, this is part of being Catholic and the sacraments and, you know, familiarity sometimes. And I think this is why, even in this little booklet that I talked about, you know, I think we Catholics, cradle need evangelization. We need to be reminded what the sacraments are. And I often say to priests, because, you know, a lot of my work is with clergy around the world, mm-hmm. and I often say that it's like marketing. When you have a product, and I mean, if you talk to young people today in a university, an awful lot of them are going into marketing. And if you market something, the first thing you have to do is convince the people they need it, if you're marketing a product. Well, you see, I'm convinced, as a Catholic, that we must market our Catholic faith, not in apologetic way, not watering down, not in a politically correct, but we must allow people to know what we believe and what our faith is. And that's why I think that if people really are told what the Catholic faith and what these sacraments are, these seven sacraments in the Catholic Church, I think they would approach it completely different. I also think people wouldn't leave the church for, you know, I encounter people who leave the church because of its weakness, the individual people's weaknesses or sinfulness. And I say to them, but you know, you shouldn't build your relationship with Jesus and this beautiful encounter with Jesus on what other people do,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I think that's so important, especially in these days, because the church has gone through such a tumultuous time, you know, the expansion of the media. And that media has told stories that have just rocked the hearts and the faith of so many of those who want to believe and want to find their foundation in the Catholic Church.
Yes, but you know, there's two things, Krista, that I would address there. First of all, we know that things haven't been all right. You know that you know when Pope John Paul prayed for and he talked about a new springtime coming to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many of us were aware and are aware that before spring, you have to cultivate, you have to get ready, you have to prepare for the growth of the seed. If you live in a farm, as up there where you are, mm-hmm. you know, in farmland has to be cultivated and prepared so it can receive. Well, you see, I think for the church, this new springtime, that the Lord began to cleanse his church, to purify. And I think it was some great, I don't remember the person, evangelist, who, like Oral Roberts or somebody, who was once asked on television, you know, said, well, what do you think of the church? I mean, the Catholic Church, and the thing about, you know, bishops and priests and the horrible things and that are happening. And he came back with, he said, let me tell you, that is not, I have many great friends, bishops and priests, he said, who are good, holy men. But he said, I believe that God is cleansing the sanctuary in all churches. He's beginning in the sanctuary and he's going to go into the pews. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think, Krista, that what has happened is that, you know, God did begin to, like I tell the priests and I tell everybody, that God lifted the veil. Because he wants transparency, he wants holiness. The most important thing in the Catholic Church, and Pope Benedict keeps saying this to his priests and bishops and all of us, that we must live transparent, holy lives. If we profess, you know, to be followers of Jesus, and we as priests and religious are publicly committed ourselves, we didn't do it privately, we took vows publicly that we are servants of Jesus. So you can understand then why the crisis happened and the disappointment. Now, having said that, and I think that, you know, in one way, because I'm from Ireland and I've seen what has happened in Ireland, what has happened in many parts of the world. But on the other side of the coin is that the media and people who have a great anger against God and against anything that stands for faith and faithfulness, they're taking this as a license to just put everybody in the same category. Mm-hmm. You know, and so there's a lot of false accusations, a lot of things said against the Catholic Church from the Pope down, that there is no way that these stories are true and that people are taking them at face value, yet they won't believe the things that are true. So I have ministered to a lot of priests, really good bishops and priests, who have suffered tremendously from false accusations. I have ministered to people, teachers in Catholic schools, people who have been accused of horrible things and proven innocent in the end. There were fabricated stories. So, I mean, in my work 30-plus years with the church, with clergy especially, I know that it's a very small majority, a very small group of priests that or bishops who have done, which is terrible. And we know that the Lord would not, it must break his heart to see those that he has chosen cause such scandal. But I still say to Catholics, you know, don't allow this to turn you away. You know, down through the history of the church, the very first disciple of one of the first disciples, Judas,
mm-hmm.
who did a terrible thing. But that didn't stop the other apostles. They continued their journey. Peter denied Jesus. He accepted forgiveness when Jesus forgave him. And see, this is what we have to learn too.
Yeah, people will let us down, won't they, Sister Breach? I think that's the glory of having the sacraments and having Jesus so present for us, because he won't, will he?
No, he won't. And you know, Krista, there's something just when we're speaking on this topic that I really think it's important for listeners to understand that, you know, in back in the early church, way back, you know, after like in the 15th century and on, you know, heresies came up about the sacraments, especially concerning the Eucharist, which is the center and the most important, because it is the reenactment of the Passion, Death, and Resurrection. It is the victory of our salvation. And heresies came up, and there were three main heresies that were confronted by the church right away, mm-hmm. and which are very much, you know, raising their heads again in our day. One of the heresies was that it wasn't really the body and blood of Jesus, you know, in the Eucharist. Mm-hmm. That, well, it's symbolic, which the church immediately said, this is wrong. It is, you know, through the ordained priest, through a priest who is ordained by his bishop in the apostolic succession, when he celebrates Mass, it is body, blood, soul, and divinity. It is the person of Jesus. He's risen and glorified, but he's real. That was the first thing, the church. The second thing that the church came back very strongly against the heretics was that, you know, there was a belief that the Blessed Sacrament remained the body and blood of Jesus, but after Mass, it ceased, mm-hmm. which was a heresy, and the church confronted that. And the third, one of the major heresies was that if the priest was a sinner, if the priest wasn't a good person, or the bishop, if they had, you know, sinned, that the sacraments weren't valid to celebrate it. And that the church very clearly defined that it is, when the priest, once a priest, once ordained, when he celebrates the sacrament, the sacraments are effective. The transubstantiation happens, the forgiveness of sin, because the priest himself is not the one that is doing it. It's through the power given through the Holy Spirit. But he will be held responsible, and it is for him a blasphemy. He will be the one that will stand in judgment, not the effectiveness of the sacraments. And it's important for listeners because, you know, Krista, I hear people say to me in Ireland and in this country, oh, I wonder if my child was really baptized. I wonder if my child really received first confession because of the priest. And, you know, they know some of these horrible things that happened. And I keep telling people, look, it is not the priest. Yes, of course your child is baptized. Of mm-hmm. course your marriage is valid. Of course all these sacraments were valid. Don't be thinking because the priest or the bishop got in trouble. And it's important for our viewers and our listeners to know that.
Mm. We're talking with Sister Breach McKenna, who has penned a beautiful book called The Power of the Sacraments, which, Sister, I just want to go out and buy stacks and stacks and pass it out to everyone, because I just think every aspect, every sacrament in which you engage us in, you bring us through a door that many people haven't gone through before when we look at the sacraments. And what I'm speaking of is the heart. Even in that first sacrament, the one that you said that's the first and the greatest, the power of baptism, talking about the child of the heart. Oh, gosh, it just got me, Sister. It was beautiful.
One of the I think, effectiveness in sharing is that in the little book, I tell real life stories. And mm-hmm. I think that just as Jesus taught, you know, that it brings it home that today, you know, things, Jesus is still acting. Miracles are still happening. Graces, the sacraments are living encounters. So if Jesus is alive, then he's doing what he always did, changing people's lives, giving them the grace. And I think through the sacrament of baptism, I love this sacrament because I think, you know, when I look around a church or I go, Father Kevin and myself go overseas, we've been to the Middle East, we've been to countries that would be predominantly maybe Buddhist or Islamic or whatnot. And when you meet a baptized Christian, mm-hmm. not just a Catholic, but, you know, baptism does put us into something. And I tell, when I speak, you know, I say this, you know, all Christians believe in Jesus Christ as Lord, and say all baptized Christians believe that Jesus is God.
Mm-hmm.
Not a Christian, that Jesus rose from the dead. When we believe the creed. Of course, we as Catholic Christians believe something even more powerful. We not only believe that Jesus is risen, we believe that he's present in our sacraments. And that's the difference, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think baptism brings us all into the family of Jesus. And of course, our mission as Catholics is to evangelize and to bring the full truth that we have of our faith to as many people as we can.
We have so many that flock to our just tremendous sacrament of the Eucharist. We see that on Sundays, and we wish we would see even more. But there's another encounter that we can have with Jesus, and you tell the story so beautifully of that sacrament that heals the sickness of our soul, and that's reconciliation.
Yes, the sacrament of confession. I just shared recently, Krista, we just came back from a retreat for over 180 priests in one of the European countries. And when at the retreat, always we have that sacrament, the sacrament of reconciliation or confession or penance, whatever you like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
We, Father Kevin, my co-worker, who's a priest to work with, Vincentian, he has a deep love for this. And he always begins our retreats. Parish missions the first night is the sacrament of reconciliation. The same with the priest retreats. And just at the last priest retreat, something beautiful happened. Three priests, two were physically healed during the sacrament of reconciliation, and one, whole life he was going to leave the priesthood, and he had a tremendous conversion and encounter through the sacrament of confession. And when they were testifying, I said to them afterwards, but you know, fathers, we Catholics know that Jesus comes. The priest is there, but it's not the priest that's going to absolve us. Not the priest. The priest is the instrument that God uses, but it is Jesus we encounter, a person.
Mm-hmm. It is, and he wants to help us. I mean, when you look through the gospel, sister, he's always forgiving sin.
Yes, and people want to also. You know, this is the age of mercy, you know, the great divine mercy, you know, the Divine Mercy Chaplet and St. Faustina and, you know, Pope John Paul, who who brought this tremendous awareness of the mercy of Jesus. But I think also that there's a real hunger in the hearts of most people, because you just listen. People go on talk shows. They go on all kinds of programs. They're telling their sins. I meet them on airplanes. I meet them. You know, people unbear their soul to you, but all their burdens and their sins.
Mm-hmm.
And I always smile and say, but you're going to the wrong person.
Mm-hmm.
Would you? And they'll say, I don't know how to go to confession. And I often say to them, you've just gone to confession.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to go to a priest, because it's through the church, the very first gift Jesus gave after his crucifixion and death and resurrection was to the church. He breathed on the disciples, on the apostles, and gives them this power. So that's where you can go.
It's so hard, because we don't want to give up our sin. What I mean by that, sister, is sometimes we don't recognize what the sin is in our life that's destroying us. We think it's a lot of other things, but there's something there that is the cancer on our hearts.
Yes, and I think as well as not recognizing, I think it takes humility. We live today in a society and a world that tells you you don't do anything wrong. If you know, in light of the New Age movement and all these self-help and self-recognition, and people will say things like, "Well, I don't hurt anybody. I don't." And, you know, it's negative. I'm not supposed to be accusing myself. I shouldn't feel guilty. And, you know, you hear all this thing about Catholic guilt and people should. But the one thing we all have to remember is that when you do wrong, it's good to feel guilty, because that's your conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, you know, nobody is without sin. I mean, except the Blessed Virgin and
mm-hmm.
the Lord. You know, everybody has to confess, and it's humility. One of the things that's needed for the sacrament of reconciliation is to pray for humility and to pray for the grace, not to be afraid.
A term that I think is
we don't like. It's called obedience, you know, obedience to authority. We don't, we say that, well, I know better. And so what can the church tell me?
Yes. And I think, Chris, I think there are two gifts, the Catholic Church, and this, I beg bishops and priests, I'm always saying to them on my retreats, look, there's two gifts that the Catholic Church has been given by Almighty God. And they're misunderstood. Now, the first, for we'll say, the authority. When we think of authority today, people think of these awful leaders that you hear who dominate, who are dictators, who destructive use of power, you know, that use authoritarian way to keep people down. That's not what Jesus... The authority of the church is to speak with the authority of Christ. To confront, and you see, bishops will say, and I give retreats to bishops, and I say to the bishop, Bishop, you have the authority to speak against moral issues, things that are not right in the church. You don't have to apologize as a bishop for getting up and speaking the truth. I look at the martyrs, I look at some of the bishops that were martyred in the early church, and if they had stood back and said, well, I don't like to offend people, because that's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
The Catholic, and Jesus spoke with authority. I mean, he wasn't always nice. He spoke, he was desperate for the salvation. He wanted to save his people. And I tell people all that, we have to pray for the gift of zeal, because for the bishop, who is the defender of the Catholic faith, who is a successor of the apostles, he doesn't have to begin to submit to all of this kind of thing of, well, you know, I can't say anything because I might lose our taxes, because it might, you know, it's good we don't speak politics. And thank God that bishops are not called to be politicians as such, but they sure are called to preach the gospel. And when you preach the gospel and the morals and teachings of the Catholic Church, it infringes on everybody, because everybody in the Catholic Church is called, as you said so beautifully, to obedience to the truth. The second thing that the Catholic Church has been endowed with through its ministers is power. I tell priests when they're ordained, the power of the priesthood, the power of the bishop and the priest is not about earthly power, is not the same as, you know, the power we think of earthly power over people. It is the power to make Jesus present in word and sacrament. Mm. It is this, and this is not something that you can buy, that if you're brilliant enough, this is why I have to tell your listeners, I completely differ with those who say because we're short of priests, we should ordain women, we should ordain married men, we should ordain, and I tell them, you know, if I wanted to be the president of the United States, if I wanted to be the some leader, if I have the ability and I'm able to do it, whether I'm a man or a woman, those jobs are open.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to the Catholic priesthood of the church and bishop, it's not about that. It's not about who has the right qualifications. It is about Jesus himself. He chose whom he desired, and he invested and gave them his power. Now, Krista, who has a right to stand in front of Almighty God and say, I want that power?
Not me.
I have a right to that power. And that's why I say in obedience, I think I pray for priests and bishops to recognize I would be petrified. I would be scared to stand before God with such a gift. I mean, such a gift that God has entrusted to humanity. His own power to make him present in word and sacrament. So those are the two great gifts the Catholic Church is endowed with. And it's in a battle right now. And here in America, you know, I pray, I love the church. I love our bishops. I have great reverence for the role of the bishop. But I do get saddened when individual bishops compromise or priests compromise their great authority and their power that Jesus has given them for a secular or for a worldly power and wisdom.
Well, Sister Breach, it's those bishops who do have the courage to be able to stand up and to try to protect the faithful and how they shepherd in their through their office, that sometimes they come against even religious communities, those oh, yes. where pride and that railing against obedience. And the faithful watch this and they wonder who will win in this struggle.
Yes, but you know, I still believe, I think that there is a lot of, disobedience. And I think we live in a time that we are living in a great age of disobedience. Because, you know, because if you look at our society, it's not only in the church, it's not only unfortunately, among the hierarchy, among clergy, among religious, but in the laity as well. Because you have it where people are saying, well, I don't have to obey the church, or I don't have to, the church is wrong, it doesn't understand. And I keep telling them, look at, the Catholic Church is not an opinion poll institution, nor is it mm-hmm. smorgasbord where you pick and choose. Like people will say, just off the cuff, they'll say, well, you know, I don't believe in purgatory, and I don't believe God would let anybody go to hell. And I say, but purgatory is a dogma of your Catholic faith. The same thing with, we'll say, in religious life or with priests. I mean, we are called to be obedient to the teaching magisterium of the church. And this is the fearful thing. When you hear, and Father Kevin, he is wonderful because he gives a talk at the parish missions on the priesthood. And one of the talks he gives is about the Jesus call to the priest to speak stands up not to speak on his own opinion, but when he wears vestments and he stands up in front of the people, he is called to speak with the mind of Christ and the mind of the church, which is one. The mind of Christ and the mind of the church. And this is where we have had a lot of confusion. This is where with politicians and I do thank God for the bishops. I know them. I have written to some of them to encourage them, who have been willing to take a strong stand. You have to be compassionate. You have to be gentle in one way. But you have to be clear and firm on what the Catholic Church's teachings are. And this is the wonderful thing about Pope Benedict. Pope Benedict, who you know and the Catholics listening know, people maligned him when he was in charge of doctrine and faith, which was a very, very vital and important role that this man held, and had to be strict and had to make clear that there were many things not acceptable in the Catholic Church, teachings of priests, writing of books that were contrary to our faith. As Pope, he has this most extraordinary shepherd's gentleness, compassion, but he's very clear. And probably one of the most brilliant theologians ever to sit on the throne of Peter. But he is not afraid to speak the truth. He's not afraid to lead his people and to confront error.
Talking with Sister Breach McKenna, the author of The Power of the Sacraments, I highly suggest that if there is a book this year that you get in the hands of those you love and those you want to love and those you're trying to help and all those things, it is just a tremendous, tremendous door to the heart of the sacraments. And Sister Breach, your work with the priesthood has been such a blessing, but that has come through your own experience of healing that has come through your encounter through Christ through them.
Yes, because I was miraculously healed in 1970. It's in my, you know, I have another book called Miracles Do Happen, which is now in like 37 languages, and I tell the story of my own miraculous healing. It's Miracles Do Happen out of servants as well. But in that, I share with the readers that I had a six-hour, I would call it a mystical, experience of the ordination of a priest. Jesus brought me into an extraordinary insight into the priesthood. And this was in 1971. And since that, I mean, it changed my whole life. I wept when God showed me what a priest is. And then he gave me a mission. At the time, I thought I was teaching like 56 little first graders here in Florida. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how is it possible? And the two missions that the Lord gave me, one was that I was to go into the world and speak to the laity. That a time of great crisis was coming, and that there were many people who would reject the priesthood, that would turn away from even accepting that their son could be called to the priesthood, and would discourage him. And the Lord put this in my heart through a very clear word. You must go into the world and speak on the priesthood. Tell my people that this is my gift to the church, and they must pray for this gift, nurture it, and love it. Because if not, it will die, it not go away, but it will be unable to be nurtured. And that was the first mission. Well, I've done that all over every corner of this world. I've spoken in stadiums, I've spoken on television, I've spoken about the Catholic priesthood. And I tell people, it hasn't fazed me one thing, bit, all this, you know, negative publicity. I keep, because I know what the priesthood is. I know those are, a lot of that's lies, and it's not the priesthood of Jesus. It's the sinfulness of the individuals whom Paul called earthen vessels with the treasure. The second mission Jesus gave me was to speak to bishops and priests. He showed me, and when I say he showed me, I had this inner vision, like as if like an overhead projector. Mm-hmm. God showed me a sea of bishops and priests, and Jesus was crying, and he said, a time is coming when many priests and bishops will seek the wisdom of the world, when they will deny the wisdom that comes from me, when they will turn away from me and lose faith in me, when many of them will see it as humility to undermine, to play down my priesthood. And I want you to go into the world and I want you to speak to bishops and priests. Tell them that it is humility to acknowledge this gift, to magnify it as my mother did magnify me through their lives and through their yes. And so I thought, how can that happen? And in a very beautiful way, on a tour of Latin America where I started speaking about priests, bishops started inviting me to give their priest retreats. Then I give several retreats in Brazil. Then the Lord brought myself and Father Kevin Scallon of Vincentian. He was in a ministry to priests, and I was in this ministry and praying, Lord, please show me, because I was out of school now, I was traveling. And about 34 years ago, his superior general from Rome and my superior general prayed with us, blessed us both, and sent us out as a team. So we've been sent out as a team. We're not freelancers. We don't go to any diocese without the bishop inviting us. We are very careful that we respect the ordinary of their diocese and the priests. We give parish missions, but we mostly give retreats. Like we give about 15, maybe 20 priest retreats more in a year. And Father Kevin and myself spend a month in Ireland at a program called Intercession for Priests, which is now founded in Poland, in Germany, and in different parts of the world. So that's how I got into this ministry for them.
Oh, again, such a blessing for all of us, because I think even with the sacraments of holy orders, it's not just for one person, but it's for all of us. It feeds the whole body.
Yes, and let me say this. I meet wonderful priests. I couldn't tell your listeners, if you know, we have gone to all corners of the world. I have met the most marvelous American priests. Like, say, for example, we forget, Krista, that there are many missionaries who left this land here, the United States, and went to the furthest end of the world to bring the gospel. Societies like the Marian All Fathers, the Jesuits, the Franciscans, the, you know, umpteen, I couldn't name them. And now they're old men. And the same with religious women. I have met religious women, you know, and lamish, doing marvelous work in parts of the world. I mean, I spent time in Papua New Guinea giving priest retreats. And from Techni, Illinois, those SVD fathers down there in Papua New Guinea, old men, spent their whole lives bringing the gospel all over. And so we meet them. We meet priests in this country where it's more very difficult, and, you know, who are every day going to that altar, living their priesthood for us. And I tell people, don't be just focusing on the individuals who have fallen, who have done. Think of the thousands of good priests and bishops who have spent their whole lives, and sisters, mm-hmm. and all kinds of great missionaries who in our own country here in the United States and in the foreign missions and all over the world have spent their whole lives. And this, let me say this also, Chris, that I always say to people, think of the charism. You know, there's a big attack against the charism of celibacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the celibate priesthood. And if priests were married, we wouldn't have these problems. And that is complete false. Mm-hmm. That is not even anything to do with this problem that happened in the Catholic Church. Let me tell you, I tell people when they say this, Jesus introduced celibacy in Matthew's Gospel when he was asked about it, when he gave this high ideal of marriage, because the sacrament of marriage, which is a beautiful and powerful sacrament, when marriage is holy, when marriage is honored and respected, so is the priesthood, celibate call, because they complement each other. And the beautiful thing about celibacy is that Jesus introduced it, and he said that when Peter said to him, I mean, he heard of the high call to marriage, he said, well, maybe, you know, we shouldn't marry. And Jesus didn't say, you're right. He said, you know, there are some who are not capable. But then that final line, he said, and there are those who, for the sake of the kingdom of God. And that's why, for the sake of the kingdom of God, is the first call that I'm a celibate woman. And then Jesus himself went ahead to be virginal and celibate. Jesus, who was man, who never sinned, but he took on a human sexual body like ours, and he lived a celibate life. Now, this is why when I go to the missions, I think, when I think of my own ministry worldwide with Father Kevin, I would never be able to accomplish to do the things. I have a beautiful secretary, Jackie. She mm-hmm. has 8 children, really good Catholic couple. They can't leave. Jackie would love to be able to go away with me to places, but she has 8 little children that her first mission is a mother, a wife, and that's their mission. And this is why it's important for Catholics not to be saying, oh, we should do away with celibacy. Celibacy is a charism. It's a gift. It has always been in the church. And if it changes, and we know that in the Eastern Church there are married, sure, but there are also people in the Eastern Church who cannot be a bishop if you're married. There's always and will always be in the Catholic Church and the Christian people who, for the sake of the kingdom of God, go give themselves completely to the Lord. And what I would say finally on that is that it's beautiful because we have the mission to bring life, not physical life, but God's life, and that beautiful gift of love, which Pope Benedict spoke about so beautifully in his first encyclical, God is Love, that we too have to love and radiate God's love. And it is God's love and his joy and the attributes and gifts of the Spirit that witness to the celibate call. And that's why I pray that all our priests and sisters and religious and those who live consecrated celibacy will radiate it, because it's not a chore, it's not a burden. And every day I thank God for this beautiful grace, because it's not my gift, it's God's gift to me. I have to nurture it, and we all have to, because we all have to live chaste lives, whether we're celibate or married or single, mm-hmm. and we all have to make choices to live holy, chaste lives. But for us as celibates, this is a very, very special grace God give us. And sure, there's loneliness. People say, you know, also in this, and I think I bring this out more in my other book, Miracles Do Happen. People get lonely, but so do married people, so do single people.
Mm-hmm.
Our home is not here. Our home is in heaven, and we are on a journey. And it's good to remember that, and it's good for young people to know that we have to all one day stand before the Lord and give an account what we did with all the beautiful gifts that are there for us, waiting for us to open. And I would say to young people listening and to people, you know, we should always pray, God, reveal your plan, your perfect plan and the will of the Father for me in my life. And God will.
You had mentioned the great gift of the Holy Spirit, those gifts that he gives us to help nurture our own lives, but also to help the life of the church. And in those charisms, it's so wonderful that we do have the guidance of the church to help us to know what's authentic and what's not.
Yes, exactly. The wisdom of the church and the guidance. I would say that, you know, when we get up in the morning as Catholics, we don't have to, and this is for very much for bishops and priests as well. When a bishop or a priest or a lay person like you or a religious like me, when we get up in the morning, we don't have to think, what am I going to believe today? Or when I get up to speak, I don't have to think, well, I wonder what will I say about this? The great grace for the Catholic Church is that we have a clear church, a mother. Because mm-hmm. the church, you know, we relate to the church as a mother. And a mother is going to do the best for her child. She's going to guide the child. She's going to protect the child from something that could be destructive for it. And this is the role, of course, and thank God we have bishops. Thank God for the teaching magisterium and for the Congregation of Doctrine and Faith and for all these congregations that have this mission to keep the church on the right path, to keep God's people. And so, for example, some of the things here in the United States, abortion, we don't have to get up in the morning and think, what do we do? We know that the church has a clear teaching on abortion, on euthanasia, on active homosexuality. And, you know, people are so ignorant on what, and I'd just like to share, first of all, an abortion. Mm-hmm. The Catholic Church has defined and clearly spoken in many popes, many, many popes down through the history of the church, that abortion is wrong. Now, we have to be compassionate, and there are many poor people, girls, who have been led in through ignorance or through panic, and I minister to them, Christy. But we must teach the clarity of this. And this is the problem with our politicians and with Catholics to say to me, oh, you know, I'd never have an abortion myself. But, I mean, it's not my place to, you know, impose my belief on others. And I'll just give you an example for your listeners. I had a young woman who was 7.5 months pregnant. She came to me, Catholic, and she was desperate because this was their first child and the doctor said it was going to be very badly handicapped. They couldn't afford. And she had been talked into by liberal Catholics and by people, different people, that, you know, God understands and you can't have that mentally handicapped child. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just beginning your husband. So she was sent to see me. Now, why? So I took a gentle approach first and I talked to the young woman and I explained to her. And she kept being very angry with me and saying, both of them, you don't know, you don't understand, you never give life, you're not a mother. Mm. Then I decided, well, that isn't working. So then I took the clear line. I said, listen, the girl, particular girl, I said, this is wrong. You are going to destroy human life and that is against the commandments. And I said, when you walk into that abortion clinic tomorrow morning, because she was going in the next morning to have the abortion, I said, when you walk in tomorrow morning, please don't say that you're ignorant. I am telling you now that you are making a decision about another person's life that you have no right. And I had talked to her about praying. I had talked to her about if Jesus gives, if this little child is handicapped, you will get supernatural grace. But I said, pray. Don't listen to a doctor who's telling you to destroy human life or anybody. Do you know, Krista, that girl went to the abortion clinic. And, of course, they use all this language, you know, like terminating and it's only a blob. While she was sitting there, it was humorous because she said, I don't know if I was more scared of God or of that Irish nun's accent. She kept saying, you will have to bear the consequence. She said to her husband, I can't go through it. I'm so scared. I'm so scared I hear this nun telling me this. And she left. Mm-hmm. She was 7.5 months pregnant. A short time later, she gave birth to a beautiful little boy, perfect. When that little boy was 8 years of age, he came to me, put his arms around me and said, my mommy said, thank you for saving me. He is now an engineer and a beautiful, handsome young man who was like 24 hours. And do you know what the mother said? She said, Sister Breach, thank you for not using false compassion and false sympathy. She said, you sounded very hard at the time, but am I thankful when I see. She brought that little baby back to a doctor who was very arrogant and angry at her because she wouldn't have the abortion. And when he saw the baby, he shrugged his shoulders and said, well, we can all make mistakes.
Mm.
Now, that's one way. The other hand, I've ministered to people who were forcing them to have an abortion, and they had children who were ill, you know, who had a lot of... And those parents put their arms around and say, I love my baby. I am so grateful, Sister Breach, that you told the truth to us. And this is... So that's the first, that's the church's teaching. So if I'm not doing anything that's wonderful because I'm only following my church's it's the teachings of Jesus. The second thing about euthanasia. I mean, who has a right to decide who's going to get killed? And you see, people say, oh, but they're suffering so much. And I tell them, look at Pope John Paul II. He suffered. His cross, we all prayed for healing for the Pope every day. But the Pope got the grace, and he told us, now is the time for the Pope to carry the cross. We all have to carry the cross. And old age is not in one way a cross, but the sickness that comes with it can be a cross. And the suffering of people, the cross comes in different ways. But Jesus gives people the supernatural grace if we trust in him. And we have no right, no doctor is the right, or nurse, or anybody. So that's the third thing. And we're very afraid to talk about it. I minister to a lot of people who may have an orientation of homosexuality, who are good people. And like this young man came to me one day in a country, and he was crying, and he was genuinely a good man. And he said, Sister Breach, I feel so alienated because the church is no place for me, and I can't go to church, I'm homosexual. I looked at him. What are you talking about? I said, the Catholic Church does not reject or condemn homosexual people or lesbians. What the Church demands from you is what it demands from me. The Church is telling you and telling me as well as a heterosexual, we cannot live a permissive sexual life. You cannot, and it's nobody's business in the confessional. I don't go around telling people, you know, I'm heterosexual, I get sexual temptations. Everybody gets tempted. You know, we're human beings, and I tell the clergy this. I say, look, Jesus didn't tell us that temptations are a sin. We all get tempted. But he gave us the means through the sacraments and through our church to be able to resist the temptations. Jesus himself went into the desert and was tempted in every way but never sinned. So I said to this young man, look, you're not bad. You didn't do this. Jesus. You go to Mass. Go to confession, and I said, just accept that you have to be a saint. I know you cannot. It's a very difficult, it's a cross. And he smiled at me, and he said, it is a big cross. But he put his arms around me, and he said, do you know, Krista, that I have been in places where that young man, I have seen him at adoration, and he always comes over, and he said, you know, Sister Breach, now I realize that there are many people who are telling us in the church who are, you know, who are liberal or who are act and say, don't you believe the church, it's against you. You can go out and live a sexually active life. That's as wrong. I can't go out. No married person, no single person. If we are following Jesus, we all have to practice chastity. And I say this to all these beautiful people who are being deceived. And I tell them, listen, don't let yourself be deceived. Those moral issues of today, the Catholic Church has teachings, and then it has teachings for every walk of life, for marriage. I mean, I remember the priest getting up and saying to the people, adultery is a sin. It isn't. The Vatican Council didn't do away with the Ten Commandments. All the commandments are still there intact, the commandments of the Catholic Church, the teachings of the Church. And this is why I keep saying, as you said in the beginning, that we have a Catholic Church because it is the only institution left that doesn't change the goalpost to suit its people. And I thank God for Pope Benedict, and I thank God for people like your own bishop out there in Nebraska and for the many good bishops and priests who are suffering. Because I'll tell you, Krista, that I minister to priests who are persecuted because in different countries and in our own country here, who are tried to be silenced them. And you see, that's why we must never allow the gospel to be silenced. We must never allow the proclamation of the word of God to be silenced. We have to be sensitive. And I think I'll give you another teaching. I minister at the deathbeds. I have had more people calling me who are dying of AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
Now, AIDS is a terrible thing, or any sexually transmitted disease. And because of my ministry of healing, people will phone me, and they're desperate. They want to be healed. And I will say to them, or when I meet them face to face, I say, well, how did you get AIDS? People say, you don't ask, and that is very embarrassing. I say, listen, you can die of anything. We're all going to die. This is one thing we're never going to escape, is the doors to go through to death. But it's not what you die of. It's how you die. And I say to them, and many of them will say, I remember one young man who was on his deathbed, dying of AIDS, and he had lived a very promiscuous sexual life. I mean, he had just, you know, with men and women, and now he's eight, and he was only 24 years of age, and he's on his deathbed. And he's begging me for me to come and see him. So I did go see him. And as I stood at his deathbed, I said to him, how did you get this disease? Did you get it? And I put the words in his mouth, and he looked at me and said, yes, sister, I did. I said, now, can I ask you Jesus loves, he is a compassionate Lord. But I said, are you willing to admit that you were wrong, that it was wrong? And he looked at me in tears, and he said, oh, please, sister, no, I know it was wrong. I'm so scared, I know. I said, listen, if I get you a priest, will you confess? Will you talk to the priest? Don't be afraid. Christy, he died a saint.
Mm.
He had a beautiful death. He was grasping the crucifix, telling Jesus how much he loved him. And this is why I tell people, you know, Jesus is full of mercy and compassion. There's nothing to be afraid of. And we, the priests, Catholic priests, have the power to forgive sin. And this is why confession is so important. The priest needs to be gentle and compassionate. And it is Jesus, that it's not the priest. You know, sometimes, I mean, I've had bad experience myself in going to confession where, you know, the priest could be harsh about things that you say. Well, Jesus would never confront people like this. You have to be truthful. You have to be honest. You have to follow the church's teachings. But you also must remember that you're sitting, and people must remember this, you're sitting in there, and it is Jesus, who is the merciful, compassionate Jesus, who's coming through you.
Oh, Sister Breege, I want to bring up something that I think is very difficult. I mean, we talked about those who suffer physically, and you've even brought up those parents who have children that they are told that their child will be handicapped. Well, my husband and I, for many of us who listen to our program, know that we have two children who are autistic.
Mm-hmm.
And with autism, what I found was that over the years, my first reaction was, how could God do this to us? But then I realized now, especially through Our Lady, that it was a tremendous gift in
mm-hmm.
that, I mean, what mother would not want to know that her child will be in heaven, you know?
Yeah.
But it really is for us. And I think what it is, it's a much bigger thing that there's an emotional suffering that this whole world is going through, that suffering of the heart that Our Lady suffered so, you know, and her sorrows, that we don't want to confront that. So we use all kinds of things to try to make that go away. And the only really response is through the grace of those sacraments.
Yes, the sacraments. In fact, I visited somebody just 2 days ago who has a little girl who's very allergies to everything. You know, and really suffering, and it's a terrible cross to these parents, and they have four or five other children. But the mother and father are really good Catholics, and they go to daily mass, and the mother teaches CCD even in the midst of her cross with this cross in the family. And she said to me, she said, you know, sister, we know that Jesus is giving us the strength. We know, and same as you mentioned autistic children, I know many people with children with autism. And I can tell you that they have extraordinary strength given to them. And I'd say to you that this is a mother of five children. She had a little boy, and she tells the story, a little boy who was with autism. She worked with him. They prayed, her husband herself. They're really devout, beautiful Catholics. And that little boy has come on, and I'm sure you find this, one of the things I tell people with special children, because I am convinced that people who have either a Down syndrome or a little child that has, you know, a lot of suffering, that they are people, those special children whose soul is immaculate and full of grace, that God places them in your home to not to care for them, but to also sanctify you. Mm-hmm. And that it is through your prayer, laying on of hands, when you go to communion, praying, that you can see it. Now, I'll give you an example. I have a beautiful little girl that she happens to be Father Kevin's niece, and she was told that she was going to have her first baby. And in Ireland, she was pressured. The doctor said, you have to have an abortion. This child is, and they give her terrible. And they were so hostile towards human life. And that girl cried for 9 months because they told her all these, you know, she had diabetes, but, you know, she was under control. Her husband's a beautiful young Catholic couple. She goes to prayer meeting. She goes to daily mass. Always. When she was a little girl, she went to adoration. She came to me when she graduated from university here in Florida, and her and I would go to adoration. Well, now she'd been always praying for a family. She got a beautiful husband, first child. They told her all these horrible things. Anyway, she kept saying, but I want to carry the child. And the doctor said, well, you know, are you sure? And the doctor was hostile. The nurse, it was awful. The baby was born. Now, the baby had a lot of things wrong with it. Not half as much as what they told her. The little baby, you know, some of the stuff that they told wasn't nearly. Well, now, during the first month, she knew, she just, herself and her husband loved the baby. Father Kevin and myself went and we prayed and we saw the little boy. Beautiful little boy. Now, that little boy now is about 8 months old. And if you could see what God is doing, it's slow, it's a lot of loving and a lot of care. But that couple have said, and so have their parents and all the other brothers and sisters, this baby has been the means of grace and unity and healing and wholeness for an entire family. One of the doctors came back and apologized. Mm. That many of the nurses have been deeply touched. And two things have witnessed is the love, the extraordinary love that the mother and father have for this little child. She went, and one of the things that Sinead told me is that the parents, they were told, I think the baby's dead. This was when she was carrying the baby. Mm-hmm. Because there's no movement. Just offhand like that. She every day she went to adoration. And one day, the day after that, she was sitting in Eucharistic adoration, begging Jesus. And the baby jumped in her womb for a half an hour. Mm. And she knew that my baby's alive. Now, that little baby has had, we're praying to Pope John Paul II, and she said to me, I have every saint in heaven on his case. Mm. But he's doing beautifully. He was just conditionally baptized, but he was baptized last week. Feast of the baptism of Jesus. Wow. So that's why when you talk about special children, parents, and I'm sure you would say this, Chris, yourself with your husband, that they affect, because they're little grace-filled tabernacles in your home.
Oh,
and
yes.
They will, and Pope John the 23rd, there's a beautiful testimony. When John the 23rd was Pope, you know, he's a little small, fat, elderly Pope, and he was sitting on his papal chair in the audience hall in Rome, having an audience, big general audience, in Paul VI's audience hall. And the Swiss guards all stand there to protect the Pope, you know, in their beautiful plumage and dress. And a little three-year-old Down syndrome child got up, and it's a slope down the church. He ran down the aisle, through the legs of the Swiss guard, and ran up and climbed up on the Pope's knee. Mm-hmm. And the Holy Father lifted him up, and he said, he gave a teaching, and I'll always remember, he said, look at this little boy. He is a dynamo of grace direct gently from God. And he said, the parents that have a child, a special child in their home, must never underestimate the power of the living presence of God working through this little child. Mm. What a beautiful teaching.
It is. It's,
and this it goes for all these little children who are suffering, all these parents who are being encouraged to abort their child, to destroy their little child. I beg them, if you only knew the hundredfold of grace that God will give to you, what you do to them, you're doing it for Jesus.
It's true. It's the heart of all Catholic social teaching, everything that, of the gospel. It's that dignity of each human life.
Dignity, yes, each human life is important, just as the elderly, just as, you know, a friend of mine said one day, there was, and this is another part of teaching about the dignity of life. I have these very, very close friends of mine in New Orleans, and one day, the father, Pete, was walking with his little granddaughter across the street in the city of New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And there was an old person, an elderly person, with a walk, and they're walking across the street. And the little girl said, oh, Grandpa, look at that poor old man. And the father turned. I thought it was a lovely, he was telling me later. And he said to the little girl, he said, you know, don't feel sorry for the elderly. You don't have to feel sorry for that old person. To be old is not bad. To be old, you don't need sympathy. To be old is to be beautiful, is that God give you this time of life. And when you're growing old, he's just getting you ready to bring you back to his kingdom. And I thought, what beautiful wisdom. Because you see, in today's world, the young people, and I mean, look, ever walk down our stores or anything, mm-hmm. everything is geared towards youth. Everything is geared towards being young and with it. Youth is beautiful, and we have to nurture them. And I tell you, we have a big responsibility and a big judgment on how we pass on to the young people the gifts of the church and the dignity of sexuality, all of these things. But for the elderly, today people are looking at them and feeling sorry for them. Why should I feel sorry for them? Sure, I have to have compassion, and it's not easy. I'm getting older myself. But we have to respect them. We have to see the dignity. We have to see the grace to grow to be old. You know, just to speak about something that happened just recently now, and this taught me a great lesson also about the dignity of human life and how you approach when tragedy hits, you know, whether it's with elderly or young. The very big tragedy happened in Ireland, in the area where I live, just a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. And where a young bride was on her honeymoon with her husband, her uncle, the groom's uncle is a bishop in Ireland. The bride is, her dad is a daily communicant, went to Mass every day. The beautiful family, very prominent in sports in Ireland. Mm-hmm. They went on their honeymoon. The bride went to her hotel room to get something while the husband was out. She was murdered. Mm-hmm. Just happened. Do you know what the father said? He said, and it's his only daughter, he said, now we too must be willing to bear the cross of Christ. Mm-hmm. How could you say that, you know? That's the grace, and that's why dignity of human life, that's why we're able to accept God's will, whether the child is, you know, God's permissive will, whether the child is sick or not well when it's going to be born, or whether the elderly person. We all have to continuously pray that when every day, whatever comes in my life, I will never be afraid to face Jesus and say, Lord, give me supernatural grace to carry my cross, whether it's a sickness, whether it's as I get old, whether it's through death, which is you know, the doorway to Jesus, but it's also something that's very difficult for those who are left behind.
Oh, Sister Reach, to be able to have the grace to be able to say something like that, and you have to be able to pray.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And do we know how to pray? I know our great Holy Father, Pope Benedict, is imploring us to make the journey from the head to the heart so that we can encounter Jesus. But do we know how to pray?
Well, you know, prayer, you know, when I was a child, prayer is the opening up of mind and heart to God, you know, and of the raising of your mind. But one of the most powerful ways for Catholics, of course, the highest form of prayer in the Catholic Church is the Eucharist. You know, that's the highest form of to participate in the Holy Eucharist, mm-hmm. to participate in this event that won salvation for us. But another powerful form of prayer is Eucharistic adoration, which is sweeping the world. And I just thank God for Pope John Paul II and for Pope Benedict, because Pope Benedict has requested that every diocese, not one diocese, every diocese worldwide, have at least one Eucharistic chapel. When I mean Eucharistic chapel, we know the Blessed Sacrament is in the tabernacle. Mm-hmm. But the Pope was asking that the Blessed Sacrament be exposed on the altar, or, you know, for worship and adoration. And I know, being a sister of St. Clare, my saint, St. Clare, is always depicted holding a monstrance. Mm-hmm. And that really goes back to her extraordinary faith in the Eucharist. And it is told in history that, you know, she spent her life in bed. She was a very sick woman in physically, but she had this extraordinary prayer life in connection with the Holy Eucharist and with the Blessed Sacrament. So much so that some theologians say that she didn't hold the monstrance to the window when the Saracens were going to attack, but actually that she stood and she was like a monstrance. Mm-hmm. And see, I tell people, if you find it hard to pray, there's two things I advise you. Say in your home where you live. The great Saint Teresa said, the first thing you do when you talk to a person, if a person walks into a room and you're going to speak to them, what's the first thing you do? You look at them. You contact them, eye-to-eye contact, to speak to the person. You don't speak to a person with your back turned to them, because it would be rude. Mm-hmm. But you make communication. Well, the reason why we have statues, holy pictures, icons, all those sacramental things around our house, I tell Catholics, get yourself a beautiful big image, whether it's an icon or a painting of the Divine Mercy, of the Sacred Heart, of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, of the saints. And when you pray, have a little place where it's important, where you can make contact. Look, like, as I'm speaking to you, I'm looking at a beautiful picture of the Jesus, the teacher. It's a big icon. My room is full of images of St. Clare, the Last Supper, the Annunciation. I love images because it keeps me, it surrounds me with reminders. But when I pray, I go to the Blessed Sacrament. Same thing. If you're not able, because I live in a convent, so I just have to cross the corridor and I'm into the Blessed Sacrament. And we have a monstrance which is in the door of our tabernacle. We can just open and just sit there for hours. Mm. And I tell people, St. Teresa talked about the prayer of looking. Just look at Jesus. Just say aspirations. Jesus, I love you. Jesus, I'm here because I trust you. I want to be with you. You know, sometimes we don't find it easy to then read, you know, the Our Father, where pray the prayers. You know, there's beautiful books today that can help you pray, words that are meaningful. Mm-hmm. And there is nobody who can pray, because all you have to do is look at Jesus or look at Our Lady and let their presence touch you and just say, Jesus, teach me how to pray. One of the great insights that I got was an experience that I had years ago. I have made a commitment every day to spend a couple of hours of Eucharistic adoration. And I do it not because just I love Jesus, but also because I realize I couldn't live without him. Mm-hmm. And it's my life. I'm a religious, and that's what I vowed my life to be with Jesus and to put him first in my life. And so one day I was in Ireland, and I have this program that we run, Intercession for Priests. This every day we at the Intercession program, there is an hour of Eucharistic adoration where all the priests go to, and nobody does that. It is completely taken up with adoration or personal prayer. Mm-hmm. Nobody does any counseling, talking, or anything. And then, of course, I would have my own other hours of prayer. But I counted this as one of my hours. But one day a group of priests came and said, Breach, we need to talk to you. Please, we're leaving early. Could we see you? And the only time that I could see was during this hour of prayer. So I gave it. I said, okay, I'll meet you at 10 o'clock. So I never thought any more about it. I told the priest that at 10:30 that night, before he went to bed, I said, Father, I'll meet you all, the five of you, at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning when all the other priests are in adoration and everybody in the campus. I never thought anything about it. The next morning, I'm going to breakfast, And I meet a missionary from South America who was over at the retreat, mm-hmm. this elderly priest, and he said to me, Breege, I have something to say to you, and I don't know how to say it to you. I kept thinking, what does he want to tell me? He said, I don't know if it makes sense, but last night when I was going to bed, I kept getting this word, tell Breege, that was my hour that she gave away. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, what? He said, that's all I got. And you know, Chris, at that moment I realized that he had no idea. But I had made a commitment to Jesus that I would give him that hour. And I didn't consult with the Lord. I treated him as a thing, not as a person. He's a person. So mm-hmm. I canceled it. I went to the core group and I went into church. And Jesus spoke to me. You know what he told me?
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, when nuns and Carmelites and Cistercians, they go into an enclosure, and they're in behind a grill, you know, all these strictly enclosed orders. And nobody can go inside that enclosure because that's reserved. It's particularly reserved for those priests and nuns who live an enclosed life. That's, we call them contemplatives. Mm-hmm. Then Jesus said, but all of my followers must have an enclosure. And that enclosure is in the heart. There must be a little place left reserved for me alone. And yesterday, you opened the doors of that enclosure that you had for me, and you were taking others in. Always remember that I wait for you to come to me. I wait for those children of mine just to come and be with me in prayer. That's their enclosure. And that's why, Krista, I am very conscious now that it is a person I'm meeting with. If I was sitting in the dentist chair, I couldn't get up and say, listen, I have to go now. Somebody's waiting for me. Because I pay the dentist. When you make an appointment with Jesus, and that's why it doesn't matter. It might be only 10 minutes for a mother with a big family of children. Might be, you know, 10 minutes. It might be when you're changing your baby's diaper. But give Jesus, if you just look at Jesus, talk to him. Give him some time every day with your children. I have a mother whom I know. Mm-hmm. She's a doctor and a very prominent doctor. And you know what she does? She tells her children, and she's lively children, several of them. She says, now we're going to have 15 minutes of silence. Mommy wants to talk to Jesus and you talk to Jesus too. And the children have learned, don't disturb Mommy because she's talking to Jesus. That's what prayer is.
Mm. It reminds me of the gospel of Mary and Martha. And even though Martha was serving him or what she thought his needs were, he kind of lovingly rebuked her and said, yes. Mary has chosen the better part.
That's right, yes. So prayer is important. It is, I tease people because I always tell them, you know, if you have no gasoline in your car, you can have a Rolls Royce, but it's no good because it won't move. So we can talk about all the gifts we have, and we can talk about how wonderful things are. But if we don't have, if our souls are not exposed to Jesus, and if we don't have an intimate relationship with Jesus, we won't bear fruit, because that's what Jesus said. Do you remember what he said in John 15? He said, I am the vine, and you're the branch. And if you, apart from me, you can do nothing. You have just, if you cut yourself off from me, you're just like a withered branch thrown out. But if you abide in me, you will bear fruit. That will last. And that's what I tell people, that's prayer. If you have an intimate relationship with Jesus, and we have to fit the prayer life according to our vocation in life. Like, for example, Krista, you are a mother of a family, or a woman who's going out to work. She's a breadwinner. She may be a single mother, and she's all these chores. She will not be like, people say, oh, I'd love to be like you, Sister Breege, pray 2 or 3 hours a day. That's my life. I committed my life as a religious woman to pray, to go to daily mass, to go to confession, to live a religion. That's demanded of me, mm-hmm. and it's not a kind of a something that I should be proud about, because it's what I promised. Now, for a mother with a family, if she has to gear her life so that she can get some time. And oftentimes, I tell young mothers, look at when you put your children to school, and maybe you have a baby. Why not go to mass? If you drop your children off at 7:30 or 8, as my secretary does, Jackie, who's a mother of 8 children, she goes to daily mass every single day. She drops her children off and she takes her little baby to Mass, or her two children that are at home. And that's one of the things I encouraged when Jackie came to work for me 23 years ago, but I didn't need to, because she loved. So I say to mothers, go to Mass, make a visit to the church, mm-hmm. spend 10 minutes with your little baby, go into adoration. There's different ways, or just when the baby's sleeping at home, pray the rosary, or look at EWTN, get the Mass that's there, or one of the Catholic stations, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's many ways you have to adapt your life and your vocation to make sure that you have that enclosure, that your heart has a place for Jesus alone. I have on my website, I put a prayer up and instructions, and I talk about a lot of what I'm saying to you now.
Mm-hmm.
I give a little teaching sometimes on different topics, you know. And
Sister Breach McKenna, I could just sit at your feet all day. Thank you so much for the time that you've given us and the power of the sacraments. It is I've said it repeatedly, it's a tremendous gift that needs to be passed on to others to help those be brought into the great gift that we have in the sacraments to help us to understand.
But I hope it's helpful to you, Christy, what I shared with you. So well, keep me in your prayers, won't you? Because Father Kevin and myself start ministry in a couple of days.
I will, sister. And thank you. You just don't even know the tremendous blessing this is.
Well, I pray very much, and thank you for your work. And listen, thank you for the great Archbishop out there, Bishop.
Yeah, Archbishop Lucas is great. Thank you so much, sister.
Great. All right. God bless you, Krista.
Thank you
so
much.
And I'll keep you in my prayers.
Please do, sister. Please do.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. The Bartha Discussion with Sister Breach McKenna, going inside the pages of The Power of the Sacraments. To obtain a copy of The Power of the Sacraments, as well as Sister Breach's first book, Miracles Do Happen, go to servantbooks.org, the website for Servant Books, or you can find them at any fine Catholic bookstore. To learn more about Sister Breach McKenna and the work of the St. Clair Sisters Retreat Ministry, located in Palm Harbor, Florida, go to www.sisterbreach.com. There, too, you will be able to request prayers for your special intentions. To hear and download our entire discussion with Sister Breach McKenna, along with many others, go to www.insidethepages.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.